Sairam, dear listeners, you may remember that last week we presented the first Q&A in the new series being broadcast by Professor Venkatraman on matters relating to Dharma. Today we present the second Q&A in that series of discussions amongst a studio panel which would discuss topics and questions arising out of Professor's first talk in his new series. The panelists are Radio Sai's Bishu and Sri Aman Jhaveri, a research scholar from the Department of Management Studies from the Institute. So over to Professor G. Venkatraman for his opening remarks, who will be answering the questions put up by the panelists. So over to Professor Venkatraman.
Sairam Sunil, don't you like me? I thought you will make someone else do that job. I am tired of doing it. Anyway, since the buck has been passed to me, let me not throw the buck, but take it bravely. I want to ask you whether you felt that last time's Q&A was of any use at all. You are free to give your frank opinion.
Yeah. Well, one thing became very clear. If you see Guru Charan Das's book, The Difficulty of Being Good, which is the basis for this discussion, you had your first musing reflecting on the prelude that he had written.
That's right.
And what is clear is, Guru Charan Das tried to understand what is dharma.
He's trying to understand.
Exactly. Trying to understand dharma. And he says he wants to get a sense of civic virtue that will help all of us. And he felt that Mahabharata probably has the answers. And but what he deliberately does, and partly because of his training, is he bases, the basis he takes for understanding Mahabharata is Western philosophy. Because he feels that that way he can arrive at a modern viewpoint, modern, secular, quote-unquote secular, modern and universal viewpoint. That is how he has approached this
I
book.
Wouldn't quite say Western philosophy. He doesn't get into Western style of thinking, liberal
of
thinking.
Okay. Okay.
But though he studied philosophy in Harvard as an undergraduate.
Yes. And so whatever inferences he has drawn is comes from that sort of a background. But what you made it very clear is we cannot understand, if you are saying Mahabharata is India's foundational text, then to understand India's foundational text, we have to go back to India's foundational scriptures. Foundational scriptures, only then we can understand India's foundational text. And so that is where you said Mahabharata, to understand Dharma and Mahabharata, we have to hinge it on Gita. That is the only
this
way.
This is part of the Mahabharata story.
In fact, that is true. I mean, Gita is a part of Mahabharata. So, excluding Gita from Mahabharata.
No, but he takes the view, it was a later insertion.
Oh, is it?
Yes, and Aurobindo says, yes, I heard that view. Okay, it's a later insertion. So what? Look at what it says. That's all I'm concerned. I'm not bothered about all that.
Exactly. So, I mean, that is what became very clear in last time's discussion is, you cannot look at dharma from a godless viewpoint.
Absolutely.
That became very clear.
Okay.
And we were trying to understand more in that direction, and Aman asked you about, you know...
Aman?
Aman, go on. Because you were the one who asked
her. He's stealing your time, so I'm giving back to justice.
Yeah, but before I come back to the question on which we left last time, I'll just like to pitch in here.
Hey, put some barrier, because we will be talking about last time. We have to make progress.
Yeah. So before I come to that, sir, I just want to add to what Bishu said about, you asked the question, how useful was the last discussion? And I think I told this last time also, and I'll probably repeat it. It is extremely useful to understand some concepts, but I feel as we move ahead, I would personally like to have something operational about it. Because at the end of the day, we can endlessly go about talking about abstract concepts.
What is the meaning of operation?
Yes, sir. So all the concepts that we talk about here, sir, for example, I'm sure we'll be dealing about how to deal, how to practice dharma in our lives, and you spoke about it last time. I would really like to have something like a simple framework from Swami's teachings, which each one of us can take with us back and try implementing that in our lives, so that we can really practice whatever is being talked in this context.
Yeah, that is very much in my mind. So there are two things. One is, how do they misread dharma? And what are the consequences of it?
Right.
So when I come to that topic,
yes, sir,
all that will come into the picture and we become open for discussion. Sure. Meanwhile, I have to draw your attention and that attention of our listeners to one of the mails I got on the subject. The person says that he, by chance he tuned to a TV channel, talk show, usual talk show, and the theme was, it is no longer possible to be honest. That was the theme. So at the end of that theme discussion, there was a vote, so-called audience. All the old people said, this is not acceptable. How can you say we'll be dishonest? All the young people said, apparently voted, if you are not dishonest, you cannot survive. It is needed. So the younger people said, I don't care if I get cancer, but I have to survive. And so for the sake of survival, I will have cancer, which is pretty ridiculous, but that's right. The current thinking. And that was an explicit commentary on the divide that exists today in this country. The old people like me, they say, your game is over, man, get lost. This won't work in today's thing. Right. That is the way they are saying. I mean, they are dismissing old people along with eternal values. Just because I am old doesn't mean my values are young or old. They are eternal. Correct. That blindness has crept in. And this blindness is nothing new, because just for a second, let us go into the Mahabharata itself. Yudhishthira had an addiction for gambling. The man lost everything. Long before he reached that stage, he should have applied the brakes. But what happened was, when he got back everything as a result of a prayer made by Draupadi to Dhritarashtra, he again went and got caught in that. That is dumbness. Yes. like investors do.
Yes.
He again invested in gambling, like in the, gambling started ruining people as far as 4,000 or 5,000 years.
Actually, at this point, I'm reminded of the conference that we had on ethics in the world of finance in 2009.
Yes, I know, I was very much a part of that.
And the most remarkable thing about that event was, Bhagwan started that day's discourse by narrating this gambling incident from Mahabharata.
Is that right? Yes. I don't remember that.
Swami started his discourse with this.
Okay, so we, let us not gamble on time anymore. But I am looking at my watch.
Sir, the question that I wanted to ask is very relevant now, especially in the context that sir has given. Right from the time of Yudhishthira till today, as you have highlighted, the problems are the same.
Yes.
Why is it difficult to follow dharma? Is the problem sociological? Is it psychological? Or is there some metaphysical force that does not allow us to follow dharma? Because it was difficult then, and it seems to be very difficult now also.
So,
where does the difficulty lie?
Difficulty lies in the price you want to pay, you have to pay to be dharmic. It's purely the price.
So which means it is not a beneficial thing to follow dharma. It's always a thing that where you pay a lot of price, which means a lot of carbon.
The question of benefit depends on which angle you look at. See, right now, I have some money in my pocket, say 10 rupees. What is the point in my dreaming about a Mercedes Benz when I won't even get a screw of Mercedes Benz for 10 rupees? I am hungry. And the hotel charges 20 rupees for a plate of meal. So I am looking to see whether they get a half plate for 10 rupees. It is that kind of thing. So, the mind does not get new models. We have cars of new models, watches of new models. I am told the latest one does not show time, but does everything else, takes your blood pressure, or whatever it is. What the hell do I need such a watch for? I want to see the time. Just as phones do everything except may allow you to make phone calls. Mind has never changed. Mind has been same from the beginning of creation when humans appeared. And the viruses that affect the mind are also the same. They have not changed due to technology. Nothing has changed. Kama, krodha, lobha, moha, madha, matsarya. Then two more, ahamkara, mahamkara. That is optional, but it is included in the old package. They are not changing. Unlike, today, nobody has heard of Ebola.
Yes.
Now it is there all over time, all over the place. And before 1980, the AIDS virus was not there. Then, the AIDS virus came and then people got so scared. But we have sort of come out of it. It's still potent. So in the world of human beings, material world, lots of new things happen. Mind is the same, the poisons and the viruses remain the same. The remedies are known. For Ebola, do this ABC, smallpox, now you don't have to do. But in the old days, there were certain precautions you took. You ran away from that place, that is the best precaution. But here, the prescriptions are known. Do this, do this, do this. No, I don't want to do this. Very simple example. 30 years or 40 years ago, the US Surgeon General told the country, this country, smoking is dangerous to your health. And on, it was printed on cigarette packets. Lot of people saw the lungs, they showed the photos and all that on TV, that have developed cancer due to smoking, lung cancer. And they were scared, and smoking plummeted enormously. And then the tobacco companies tried to push the smoking habit to third world countries, especially China and India, huge markets. That is the way it happened. But I am drawing attention to the young people in America who refuse to smoke. Now it has come to such an extent that you cannot smoke in many places, public, right. This and that. Of course, they have developed other addictions. That's a different thing. So in the same way, if I decide to say that I won't do this, you'll be saved. But there is another force that is preventing you from being good and all that. That is your peers. Right. So the peer pressure is enormous. In the old days, the peer pressure came from your classmates and friends in the town. But today, it comes from all over the world via the so-called social media. Right. And
all sorts of media.
Huh?
It's all sorts of media.
No, but now social media has become so powerful. The young people don't watch television. Previously, mass media, as it is now called, had a monopoly. Now with the cell phones, so who are you? Everybody is a broadcaster, everybody is a blogger.
Yes.
It has generated so much information load. Yes. Nobody listens to nobody. You say, I'm broadcasting, please listen to me. Unless you do some, what you call, stupid rap song, and then make it viral by telling all the fellas. These viral things, one day viral wonders. Every day there's something that is going viral. Yes. It dies by itself. 2 days later, you don't know what it is. So, if I refuse to look at the other, and if I say, I will dictate who I want to be, then it will not happen. Everywhere, it is like keeping up with the Joneses, or that old Oneida advertisement, neighbors envy, owners pride.
Yeah, yes.
So, and those days, unless you paid cash, you couldn't take the TV. Now they have this monthly payments, this thing.
Everything.
And you can take away the keys, nothing, no, not even pay a cent.
Yes.
So the devil has become very clever in tempting you.
Right.
And here we must remember the story of Jesus. Before he gave the Sermon on the Mount, the devil says, I'll give you everything you want in the universe. He said, get thee behind me, Satan, and walks away. Mm-hmm. So this said medicine is well known. If I decide not to take the medicine because it's bitter, don't blame anybody.
Yeah, but actually, people think that is freedom. People think that is what is happiness. We feel that if I succumb to this little, say, tinge of greed, that is what will give me happiness. I think ultimately it is that pursuit of happiness. But you are thinking that is what will give you happiness. I think that's why everyone is going for it. But if somehow we realize that actually you will get much more happiness in the other way, then probably no one will go towards that.
You see, this happiness is quote-unquote tangible. You get a kick, you don't get a happiness. You go high, that's all, only to go down. The second thing is, you said something, what was that? Freedom.
Yes.
See, what is the meaning of freedom? How do you understand the word freedom? Tell me.
Yeah, I think the general understanding is I can do what I want to do, what I like to do.
Yes.
Hmm. But I do know that is not the real way of looking at freedom.
Sir, I think I'll just recollect Vivekananda's quote.
Yes.
Where he said, God has given you the freedom to think, but first think what true freedom is. So I think that's the same question that sir has asked us.
But I think we got to like what we have to do.
No. True freedom, Swami has said, is no matter what the act, there are no consequences.
When you do everything...
If I want, I can go and murder somebody. I'm free to do that. Law says that. But you did it, but the law prevents you from doing this. So you better go to jail or hanged or whatever it is. There are consequences.
Yes.
Freedom is something, a state, where there are no consequences to the action. And that is a free will. Swami said, God alone has free will. Of course, he will never do anything that is harmful or injurious. But from a practical point of view, there are no consequences. God has no such thing as karmic burden, good or bad.
I think that can happen only if you don't identify yourself with the body.
In fact, I remember...
That is correct. But that is a definition of freedom.
Yes.
And this is the spiritual definition given by Bhagavan himself. There are no consequences. Is there a state where there are no consequences?
You can reach that state only if you don't think you are the doer.
Correct. That's true, but we are jumping. See, Narada asked, Valmiki asked Narada, is there such and such a man, perfect man? Oh yes, there is. His name is Rama, he lives in Ayodhya, is the king, write about him and so on. So, if in the same way you ask, what is free will? Free will means that which when exercised does not lead to any consequences, either good or bad. That is possible only for someone who is above good, above bad, who is transcendent.
Yes.
Right.
Okay. Now, none of us in that definition, according to that definition, have any free will. As long as you have some attachment that is binding you. That is why in the Gita, Krishna says, even sattva is a chain. Swami used to call it golden chain.
Golden.
So what is the big deal whether you have a steel chain or a copper chain or a silver chain or a golden chain? Chain is a chain.
Hmm.
So you break away from it. Krishna says, gunas are the play of prakriti. Prakriti is your mother. She will try to pamper you, spoil you, but keep close to herself. Break that and come to me. Break that. Guna atita. So, guna atita has no a free will. No one else has got that free will. So, this freedom that people are talking about is slavery to the senses.
Yes.
That is the mapping. Yes. That says, see, this is not freedom. You say, this is gold-plated, platinum-plated slavery. That's all.
Absolutely. Right. But going back to what Aman was saying, sir.
Do you agree with me?
Absolutely. I mean, there is no question about it. But going back to what Aman was saying...
I wonder how many people will agree with me. Let's see whether they're right.
No, because I want to probe that further because I think that is what will help listeners also. That you are saying, can we develop a practical code? Because ultimately this is what Guru Charan Das tried to do. Tried to give some practical code of virtues and code of life to lead...
No. All that is possible for the simple reason... Swami has given that in great detail. So we just have to collect it together, codify it, para 1, para, sub-para A, B, C, like
right.
that.
Right.
That we can do. He has given, that was one of the beautiful things that I found in the case of Swami.
Mm-hmm.
If you read the Gita, you get the truths. But the do's and don'ts are not explicitly given there.
Mm-hmm.
Gita is not for dummies. Okay, you can get very confused. It's a very profound truth.
You can read it 1,000 times and still be a dummy.
No, there are a lot of subtleties. It's pretty subtle. But Swami knew the audiences he was addressing was full of dummies. He didn't want to insult us. But what he did was Gita unpacked and parsed for two greatest dummies in the world. That's how you can read it. He has done it.
Yes.
So, for example, to describe the, later on we'll discuss this, Atma Dharma and Paradharma.
Exactly.
So, what is the meaning of Paradharma? The word para has got two different meanings in two different contexts. When you take Atma as yourself, para is the body. Whereas, if you consider yourself a body, that body is called Swa, with the lower S
yes.
and V. And the other guy, like he is the other guy for me now. He is para.
Mm-hmm.
And my job is called Swadharma, his job is called Paradharma. But when I stand before God, God is the higher self. So that is Swadharma or Atma Dharma. And the body's job is to execute that is Paradharma. So he talks about a high court judge, how he behaves in court, how he begins in his house, and all these things are there. So the codification has been done. We have to sort of make it available to the people. Hopefully we will do it in later talks. Okay. We have to come to that. Otherwise it's pretty theoretical.
Yeah, maybe Vishu, maybe we could probably, you know, whenever sir talks, we could probably also look at those things and try to relate it.
Yes.
For us and for the readers also.
Yes, yes. I think that is...
Listeners, not readers.
Sorry, listeners.
Because Bhagwan also, I was just reading Dharmavahini, where Swami is saying this daily practical code of conduct related to temporary matters and problems which are changing is called Achara Dharma, Swami says. And that is, as you are saying, based on Atma Dharma. But how to map that? How to derive an Achara Dharma from the Atma Dharma? I think if we can know this principle, if we know that modality, that modus operandi.
No, that is a very good question.
Then, you know,
but
we
before,
can try and...
Before I comment on that, I want to do a little commercial. Sorry, even if I violate your code. I did a series on Dharmavahini.
Exactly.
Please go and listen to that.
Okay. No, but these are things I think we should go on.
I won't pay any advertising fees.
Sir, I want to come back to...
No, but I just want to comment on that. That is the crucial question. Because Atma Dharma is an abstract philosophy, a concept. To translate it into a practical world, we need a compiler to use the computer language. And that compiler has to be written by each person based on that person's practical life and duty and the age. Mm. But the principles for that have been given.
Right.
For example, in the olden days, if you take the jobs, there were potters, there were vaidyas, all sorts of fellows like that, teachers and so on. There was no pilot, airline pilot. So, do you mean to say airline pilot has no dharma? He has his own duties. And you have to take this thing and apply it. Apply the principle. That is what is important. In fact, that's why I always give this practical example. Every country has a constitution, Britain being a famous exception. They have no written constitution, but all other countries have. There are these democracies. Constitution is the primary reference. The acts passed by the legislature must be consistent with the constitution. Otherwise, they will strike it down.
Correct.
You see, this happens in all countries.
Yes.
Certain bills are passed.
Yes.
Somebody goes, then the constitutional bench will meet.
Yes.
Of course, in US, there's no such thing as constitutional bench. It's a full bench all the time. But if there are constitutional issues, they will decide.
Yes.
But then what happens is, in written, where countries there are, where they have written laws, the elected people can change the constitution.
Yes.
That is amendments. Hmm. And in
perhaps
India...
You'll need majority.
Yeah, there are rules.
Yeah.
But in America, they are very, very fussy about changing the constitution. It is now, last 100 years, it has not been changed.
Has it happened for India? It has also not happened.
India is hundreds.
Okay, the constitution has been changed.
Oh, yes. It's just like Sachin Tendulkar's court book.
Oh.
Some fellow will come and object and do it. There, they make a big fuss about what the founding fathers want. Sometimes they twist it. Who the hell knows what the founding fathers want? I mean, just to, I'm not being humorous.
Yes.
There are lots of things, cyber crime, they say. Founding fathers did not know about the cyber world and all that.
Yes.
Now you are calling it a crime. In what way I have taken anything from you? I have taken something that exists in the electronic world. In what way is the crime? They will talk about intention. You have stolen this because you want to make this. So intention is how you bring those kind of traditions into this world. And that is what Dharma does. What is your motive when you do an act?
Mm.
Right. So those things are basic to the human mind.
Yeah, but as you are giving the example of constitution, I thought the constitution is like an Atma Dharma and you derive from that.
Exactly.
But you are saying that that also is
modified. This is man-made equivalent of this.
Yeah.
Constitution is just a reference.
Yeah.
But man changes all the time. So the constitution also changes.
Right. But Atma Dharma is something which cannot change.
No, itself. That I agree. I am talking of something being superior to something else. That's all.
Sir, Bishop raised
it's a local reference.
Local reference, just to understand.
Sir, Bishu raised the point of price. I just want to come back to that point. is it always compulsory to pay a price for following dharma? I mean, that really demotivates somebody. Yeah, if you look at Mahabharata, exactly. No? After following dharma, after doing what Krishna told, at the end of the day, the Pandavas were still not happy. And now again, we are talking about the price that every individual is ready to pay. So, is there, every time is there a price involved, number one? And secondly, sir, is that the right way to look at dharma? Meaning...
Shouldn't you be rewarded because you're following dharma?
Exactly. I mean, is that the right way to look at it? I mean, I have a price to pay or I'll be rewarded, you know, I mean, in a utilitarian good. Perspective. You know?
Absolutely. I'm doing good, then why I have to pay the price for doing good?
It all depends where you come from. Why does a fellow drink? Because of desires. Then I have to say, if you drink, buddy, one day be ready for cirrhosis of the liver. As Gamow was brilliant physicist, of course he was not super brilliant, but he did some very key work and he popularized science in his own way. He used to regularly drink. And then he got cirrhosis. He knew. He said, my liver is paying the bill. That's all. Now, he paid the price of life. He knew it was going to happen. On the other hand, the fellow who stays away from it will be saved from cirrhosis of the liver. He is doing what you call a sensible thing. If you take off the brakes in your car and drive, it's stupid. This fellow has taken off the brakes on the mind and is paying for it. It is in that sense. We are not talking of what you call comparative prices. This watch, it is costing so much. That watch is costing so much. Then you make comparative evaluation, use this parameter, that looks good, use that parameter, that looks good, and all that. That is our human mentality. For those people, this argument about price arises. Then, you go to the next level. People expect rewards. Fine. Krishna says it is not a sin to expect a reward for being good. There is absolutely no sin. You ask for a reward, you do pujas, you will get a benefit. That benefit will come from the gods. Ganapati, this, that you worship. But then, it is like a short-term, this thing. It's like a holiday free ticket. Go to Singapore for 3 days. Say you a lottery of one. You go there 3 days, 4 days, you come, you show your photographs to everybody, boast and all that. And afterwards it disappears, fades away. So you come back, you go through many lives. Till you exhaust your desires. Then you come to me. So for a person who is at that stage, he is doing good not because he wants to go to heaven. He says, I don't want heaven. I want you. I want to be near you. We have seen devotees of that kind. So, price is irrelevant. Suppose you give me 1 crore rupees, I would not know what to do with it. Swami has narrated that rather interesting story in this context of, irritating Arjuna. Krishna told him, Karna is much better than you. What do you mean? He is very generous. You are a bit of a miser. You don't give away easily. I challenge you, you are wrong and all that. Say, okay, look at that mountain. It's all gold. Before evening, you have to give it away. So he goes to the village, this, there, and said, Dandora, come on, take all the gold you want. They come with axes, baskets and all that. Before sunset, sun is setting 4 o'clock, not even at 1/100th of the mountain has disappeared. This fellow is sweating, he doesn't know. Karna is coming. And, hey Karna, come here. I want you to prove me one thing. What is that? That you are a very generous man. Okay, what's your test? This mountain of gold, you have to give it away before sunset. No problem, he said. As he was talking to Karna, one man was coming. Karna said, come here, take away the whole mountain, it's yours. In 5 seconds it was over. See, he said. So, what is the lesson here? I am not interested in having anything. That kind of desirelessness will only come to a person who spends all his time for God, in some manner or other. There is a non-stop dialogue with God. There have been people like that whom we regard as crazy. But for them, nothing else mattered. But that is also not the recommended thing in the Kali Yuga. Goswami says, that's very nice, but it's also a bit selfish. Because you still have a body, and there are others with the body, you are not paying attention to the God in those bodies. They are suffering. You are only looking at the image of God that you have in your mind, Krishna, Rama, whatever it is. But you forget I am there also, so yours is not 100%. Unless you worship me in all forms, and give respect to me in all forms, adore me in all forms, your devotion is not complete. So that is the message needed for this. It was not mandated so emphatically in earlier eras, because people by and large respected nature, they worship mother and so on and so forth. They fed the crows. What is the purpose of feeding crows? Do you know that?
So the ritual says that your ancestors will be happy with you.
That ancestors thing was a deliberate ploy to make you feed. Crow is the scavenger of society. So you must show your express your gratitude for that. This is a very important point. My mother always said that. But when my wife died, my sister and all were given an interview. Of course, I was not called for the interview. Her sister, my sister, and my sister's husband. So my sister's husband was very orthodox and used to perform annual ceremonies and all that. But it now became difficult for a number of practical reasons. Priests are not available. So my sister asked Swami, Swami, they say the ancients will be hungering, asking for food, thirsty. Swami mocked her, oh, is that right? And then he said, look, all these rites are instituted so that people will give charity, otherwise they'll be conjures. You threaten them. So what? Then what do we do, Swami? See, be practical. These days you won't even get priests, they wouldn't know what mantras to say. Think of your ancestors, shed a tear and feed the poor. In fact, he said the same thing in 3 hours present. He just said, as you go along, you won't find any priest. You just put the photo of your mother and father, offer flowers, shed 10 tears. How much you have sacrificed me for me. I will now return that sacrifice to you by seeing you in others and helping them. So this was what you call people, you know, if you tell them it's rules, they will obey very seriously.
Yes, sir.
If you tell them this is what God wants.
and put a punishing thing on. If you don't do, then they'll be unhappy and you can get...
So all the management tricks were employed. God knew what it is. Yes, I don't know where we went into this. But I think it came out of price, isn't it?
Yes, sir. Yes,
okay.
Right.
Yeah, I think that. But that was a very, very important thing that you shared.
So, you know, we are all the greed for purchase. Why? I don't really need. Right. In fact, as people said, you purchase things which you don't want with money which you don't want.
Money which you don't have.
don't have. And then something else.
Right. Mm. So, sir, then it's finally...
And that is anyway irrelevant and useless, something like that.
So, finally, it's all about perception, if I mean, the way I am trying to understand is it all about perception about what is the goal of your life, what you want to do as an individual, or is it something more than perception?
As sir very clearly said, I mean, once you look at the concept of Atma Dharma, then you know what is the true goal of your life, and then everything else...
That gets mapped onto it.
Yeah, everything else gets mapped onto that.
Absolutely.
Yes.
You see, perception is something which I try to have using the freedom of my senses.
Hmm.
Okay. I see something and I say, okay, this is needed, this is not needed and all that. Whereas, I have another thing. My goal is to go to God. Anything that distracts my attention is a distraction. As Swami said, you want to go to Delhi, get into an express train, go fast. You get into a passenger train, next station stops. Hey, let me go out and see.
Yes.
By the time you go out and come back, the train is gone. That's not right. I'll stay the night. Next day you get into the train. It happens to you at every station. Basically, you go through many janmas. That means you are really not serious about the purpose of your life. So, perception is means... There is really no goal. I see this, I see that, and so on. We have a goal. We are not aware of that goal. The moment I have a goal,
right,
then it becomes what you call clear. Your father sends you to the school and college to study, get out and get a good job. Mm. That is what your father's idea. If I don't inherit that and stay true to that, then I can talk about, I think my perception is getting out and wandering, asking father to pay the bill is right, the right thing to do. So I would say when there is nothing else, the idea of perception makes sense to me. But when my dad has said, listen, I'm spending, investing on you, you better come there and get it. It's not that he is going to enjoy your support and this thing all the time. Even after your once father passes away, which is demanded by time, the people will still be committed to certain values of life, family, tradition and all that.
Yes.
So that is what you call an objective. Yes. This objective can be comprehended only by a human being. Tigers don't have any perception and all that. They are hardwired.
Instinctive.
It's hard. I call it hardware. Mm. We have got a software.
Yes.
We have to put an operating system and run it. If you put a corrupted operating system, cracked OS, as we say, then the performance will be like
all the applications.
Suddenly there will be blank screen. Yes. Blank screen.
So somewhere within this discussion, I think there is some utility of blind faith, if I may call it so, or implicitly doing something that you give the example of an objective. I don't consider my perceptions at all. I just look at an objective and I feel that my father has done so much for me, I should pay back to him or something of that sort. That object setting and then reaching that objective, does that involve some kind of blind faith or implicitly following?
I won't use the word blind faith. See,
faith is, yes.
Blind faith means the fellow just like a robot,
yes,
believes in it. Mm. I wouldn't call all the bhaktas of the past as blind robotic idiots.
Yes, sir.
Far from it.
What is the difference?
Okay, that is what I call for Tyagaraja. Tyagaraja spent we all know Tyagaraja is a great saint, to wholly devoted to Rama. He saw God in the form of Rama avatar. And he had a personal relationship. Every day he would wake up Rama.
Yes.
Then every day he would go to put him to sleep. In fact, late Sangeeta Kalanidhi S. Ramanathan, he used to give sort of, not a discourse, but musical chat with small groups, a day in the life of Tyagaraja. He was doing it in America, and he sang his, what you call, song, wake-up song, the equivalent of Suprabhatam. One American listening, if that is the wake-up call, I'll pull my bed sheet and go to sleep. He's not. And then he's for comparison, he says, what did Vishwamitra do? He said, Kausalya Supraja Rama, get up. Get going. I mean, he sang it musically. Mm-hmm. Well, he said, no. He said, please, Rama. A beautiful raga, slow, mellow. It's you have to make them bang the bell loudly to wake up. So that is the way. Everything he did was a conversation. He looked like what you call a useless man wasting his time and all that, which is what his brother thought. I say, you can mint money with your song. Why don't you do that? His perception was wrong.
Yes.
Tyagaraja was clear about a goal. These perceptions, so-called, did not arise for him. So I don't know whether I'm getting through, whether I'm not even sure whether the answer is correct. But these are not people without a goal. When you have a goal, the perceptions and distractions don't matter.
Aware. They are not blind.
They are not blind. For them, that experience is real.
Yes.
Right.
Yes.
You see, here is an important point. A thing to us seems blind if we cannot rationalize it below the senses. We fail to understand there is an entire world of experience above the senses. When we don't believe in it, anybody who believes in that world, we call him blind.
Blind.
There is a world beyond the senses. Yato vacho nivartate aprapya manasasa. You can't present it in word.
Yes.
You can say describe it in words, nor can you even conceive it in your mind.
Yes.
Whether that exists is the fundamental question. For those who believe that it exists and who have that experience,
right,
you can't describe that experience.
Yes, sir. Aman, we are running out of time. I know you have so many more questions, and I too have actually so many more.
But I think, Bishu, what we should do next time is, I think both of us should then go back to Sir's Dharmavahini discourses.
Yeah,
and
yeah, I'm doing that.
Yes, and then we should have a discussion.
Thank you for plugging that point.
Throwing it up, to our listeners.
Yeah, absolutely. Because I think how much ever time we spend discussing this, we'll never be done with it. Because this is such an complicated thing, you know. Because
actually,
the world itself, I mean.
No, I don't think it is complicated. The world looks complicated because we want to look at the crummy details.
Hmm.
Details are important.
Yes.
In so far as they can become a distraction for me. But what did Swami tell us so many times? The essence of all the 18 Puranas, Vyasa put in two sentences.
Yes, absolutely. Yes.
You know, true. Help ever hurt never.
True,
love all
but, serve but all. As you also have many times said, I mean, it sounds very simple, but it is not as.
No, simple. That I agree. Yes. Because that is where the subtlety lies.
Yes.
First of all means who.
Exactly.
Sir, what is the meaning of sir?
What
is the meaning
what
of is love?
Yes, sir.
So when you go into that, you get three big libraries.
Puranas.
Three big libraries.
Yes.
As if that is not enough. Yeah. Help ever hurt never.
Yeah.
I often said when Swami was telling that something went wrong with the sound system and everybody heard it as hurt ever help never. Wherever you go, Swami has himself described in his discourses how people bawl at you, bite at you like Alsatians and bulldogs and so on and so forth.
Mm, yes.
So, the devil is in the details, as Americans often say.
But I think
that's really true. So, it is not enough to say love all serve all.
Absolutely.
One more last and I'll just drive home the point. Many times boys used to say, Swami, we love you. And then Swami will say, Swami also loves you. The love of Swami is entirely different from the love of boys. Because Swami's love is sublime, pure.
Absolutely.
There is no attachment involved in that.
Exactly.
It is divine benediction. Whereas you and I, let's face it, we have plenty of attachments.
Yes. Yes.
So whatever love we give to Swami is like tap water, to put it rather politely.
I think, as Aman said, I think that is what we will be doing. Go back to Swami's Dharmavahini and your commentary on that. And I think that's what we should request all the listeners to do.
I would submit that you should also look at Gita Vahini.
Gita Vahini, yes. Bhagavan's Gita Vahini. I think, I mean, these are very, very, I mean, if you're looking at India's foundational texts, these are India's foundational texts, Dharmavahini and Gita Vahini. And I think it is from these texts that we should derive our civic virtue.
True.
What is it that, you know, will help us to be good and lead a happy life in this world. So probably we'll end today's session because we are really cutting into the next segment of Thursday Life. Thank you so much, sir, for coming to the studio. And this is happening in the last few weeks, and we're really grateful to Bhagwan for having given us this opportunity to dilate on this such an important topic. And all the time our discussion actually has Dharmavahini as the basis. And I think that cannot be anything better than that.
And for me, the thrill is that right there in that chair, Swami sat and said how we must do our duty.
Yes.
And we are trying to do that in that very same, most sacred spot as
absolutely.
Far as I am concerned.
Absolutely.
In relation to radio work.
Absolutely. And you've been there right from the beginning. you have made the whole thing.
I don't know about that, but when Swami was sitting there, all were there and I was sitting here.
Yes.
Swami asked, where is Venkatrama?
I know.
I was happy about that.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, we are blessed to have you and really to work and really.
You haven't heard my price yet.
No, frankly, because to understand Bhagavan's teachings, it's very important to have such soulful discussions, and we are grateful to Swami for giving us this opportunity. So I will hand it over to Sunil to make the final announcement.
Sairam, dear listeners, that brings to an end the second Q&A session on Professor. Earlier talk in the new series related to Dharma. We hope you liked the session and remind you that next week we would be coming back with Professor's second talk in the present series. Please do not forget to tune in then. We shall alert you in advance with web and radio announcements. We thank you for listening and request you to inform those whom you know and are not aware of this series also to join in future. As usual, the podcast of this program may be accessed via our website radiosai.org. Thank you, and Jai Sai Ram. Coming up next in this Thursday Live segment is Service, Love in Action. Sai Ram, and thank you.